9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. It's a Friday here on FPC Radio Live. That's right, we are closing out the month of July with a ton of things to talk about. Everything that's transpired over the last week or so since we've last been on the air. But we are here, and it is NFL training camp, and we are prepared to break down everything that has happened the last few days. John, are you awake? Have you had your coffee? Are you ready for some football?
I am ready. Absolutely, I'm sipping a nice cup of coffee as we speak.
Yes, I'm picturing little coffee cup, pinky finger up, you know, very high class, you know, classy, that type of thing, right?
Well, kind of mafioso too, you know. But I don't have jewelry. I don't have a watch. No, I just have one of those thermal mugs that keeps the coffee nice
right.
and warm.
Right. Hey, those are great. I love those things. I use them quite often. Actually, I got a small miniature one where it's. You brew the coffee stays incredibly hot, but the outside is cool to the touch. And it's sometimes deceiving, though, because you think that the coffee isn't quite as hot as it is, and then you take a sip, and, it is. Being off the air the last couple days, a lot of stuff happened. First off, training camps opened across the league, so that's obviously big news, and it obviously is going to take up a lot of what we talk about here, which is kind of nice because it means the shows kind of write themselves the way this is going. But the big thing and the big news outside of free agency and kind of, you know, what's been ongoing for the last several weeks is the contract extension for Kyler Murray. Now, we didn't get a chance to react to the study clause. Because they have since rescinded that and changed it and taken it out of the contract. But we can still comment on the whole... I think the whole situation with that was just... I mean, that looked bad on all sides. I don't think anyone, Kyler Murray, the Cardinals, his agent, anyone, looked good coming out of that. It was an odd. I mean, obviously, everyone's reacting to it being an odd stipulation in the contract and everything like that, and very unique. And I'm like, all right, well, look, I don't really care so much about that, especially since Kyler Murray signed the contract with that in it. So I'm not too I just don't really care so much about it. I don't think it's a big deal. I just think, look, I'm not a big Kyler Murray fan. Let me rephrase that. I don't think he's worth $230 million. What about you, John?
Well, I mean, that's the going right now, right, for quarterbacks. So, you know, we're going to see what happens when Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow, when they're ready to get extended next offseason, that they're going to be, you know, bigger contracts than that because they're both better than Kyler Murray. I think they're both better than Deshaun Watson, who got $230 million fully guaranteed from Cleveland. And they don't even know if he's going to play this year. Murray, again, these teams get in situations where they finally have a good, competent, or very good quarterback, and they really can't let them go because these guys don't just kind of happen all the time. And even though Murray is probably, I don't know, the 12th best quarterback in football, wherever you want to put him, that means he's better than the other 20 starters in the league. So if you have him, you kind of have to keep him. But it's just odd that you'd put this type of clause into a contract. If you're going to fork over $230.5 million, $160 million of it guaranteed, you wouldn't think you'd have to put that in there. That's now you're a professional, right? If someone's a professional in any aspect of this, you know, I don't think doctors have it in their contracts with hospitals that, you know, you have to look at the x-rays.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of what you have to do. I think they kind of assume that. Or the actors, you know, you do have to read your lines or there's some rehearsal that's involved. This is kind of a bizarre contract, but the whole setup of the Arizona Cardinals is really weird. They've extended Steve Keim, the general manager, Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach, and now they've got Kyler Murray tied up for 7 years. It seems like they're in bed with these three guys who I don't know if they're all that great at what they do, but the Bidwells have decided we're jumping in with these three.
Yeah, and look, I'm right there with you. Like, I have my concerns about Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, he has an incredible pattern of just collapsing in the second half of seasons. And this goes back to his, you know, his times at Texas Tech. And you know, after a while, you got to think, like, what's the deal here? How is this happening that consistently with this one head coach? And, you know, that kind of tells me, all right, maybe, you know, second time around, once you got a little film on this team or whatever team he coaches, he's rather predictable. So, yeah, look, I think there's a lot of issues in Arizona outside of how I feel. Like, I think I agree with you. Like, maybe he's, like, the 12th best quarterback in the league right now. I don't know. I haven't done my ranking list yet. It's coming soon, though, John. It's gonna be out there. It's got to happen. But between 12 and 15 might be appropriate for him. And in which case, like I said, I don't necessarily think, you know, tying yourself to him for that much money is a great business strategy, especially, like I said, I mean, if you felt the need to have to put that in the contract, there's got to be some concern at a little bit on their end, in which case then that makes the $160 guaranteed dollars a whole lot bigger of an issue, because you're investing money. Not, and you kind of said it to start, that's the going rate. Yeah. Oh, for sure. But it kind of feels like it's the going rate and they're just paying it because they have a guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not because he's the guy. So that's where I think, you know, poor teams are going to, you know, obviously keep themselves down by making poor business decisions like this. And look, I mean, I could be wrong, because Kyler Murray could, you know, turn the NFL world upside down and be this elite quarterback. I just don't think he is. I think he's a pretty good quarterback. I don't know, again, how much more or if he's worth that type of money. Like, look, money is not indicative of skill. I mean, clearly. I mean, Tom Brady makes $25 million, and that is, like, ranks, what, 17th, 18th in the league? And that's about the only time you're ever going to see him rank that low on a list of quarterbacks is when it comes to comparing salaries. But I you know, it is what it is. It's just the market of the NFL. I just, if I'm Arizona, if I'm a Cardinals fan, it's a little disconcerting that, one, they put the stipulation in there, two, Kyler Murray signed it, three, he got upset because of it, and four, the team wilted to public pressure and removed it after, what, a day and a half? So, what kind of confidence do you have in that organization to make smart and wise decisions here on out?
There's a few things. I mean, the Bidwells are probably bottom third, bottom fourth in terms of cash-strapped owners.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this isn't Jerry Jones. This isn't Robert Kraft. This isn't, you know, obviously Stan Kroenke with the Rams, who just have a flush with cash. There's no issue with that. The Bidwells aren't as rich as those owners. So with that contract that Kyler Murray signed, $160 million of it is guaranteed. That money has to go into an escrow account. So that's tied up. So sometimes these organizations, even though they're all worth billions of dollars, they may not have the fluid cash that other organizations have. But if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, and I don't really know of any other than some of the people that are on that commercial with, you know, defense, you know, when they're in a Cardinals game.
Yeah.
That's about the only ones I know. I honestly don't know an Arizona Cardinals fan, but this is like the first time you've had a quarterback other than a few years of Carson Palmer, who was at the end of his career, and a few years of Kurt Warner, who was at the end of his career, who actually took you to a Super Bowl. So now you've got someone who's, you know, good, competent, maybe could be very good. You don't want to lose them, I guess. So, you know, it's like beggars can't be choosers at this point, and it's like, what are we going to do? We have to keep him, and the fan base probably, you know, likes the guy because he makes them somewhat relevant. They were 10-2 at one point last year, and then they lost four of their final five, and then were embarrassingly eliminated by the Rams in the wild card round. I mean, that you could make a case that the Cardinals' performance was the worst performance of any team in the playoffs last year, along with the Patriots losing 47-17 to Buffalo. I mean, those two games weren't even contests.
No, and you know, look, Kyler was not good in that game, and that's part of the reason why I'm hesitant, because that's, I mean, look, maybe it's the last thing that I saw. I mean, I'm not basing my opinion solely on one game. That'd be foolish. I'm just saying that perhaps, you know, that being the last impression that I had, kind of, you know, you said, you know, look, they think they found the guy. Well, I still wonder if he is the guy, and that's where I, like I said, if I'm a Cardinals fan, if I'm a you know, well, a Cardinals fan, I'd be concerned because, like, okay, if he doesn't get any better, that contract's going to be a huge pain, and this team is going to be a middling 500 team, you know, 10-7, 7-10, that type of thing, anywhere in between those.
Which is good for them, though, right?
Wait, I mean, well, honestly, yeah, relative.
I think we've all been kind of spoiled because we've seen the Patriots for 20 years, and I'm a Packers fan, and although they've disappointed a lot, they're always in there. Yeah. You know, if you're a Cardinals fan, it's like, wow, 9-8, this is great. We're in contention for a playoff spot. Isn't this a fantastic time to be a Cardinals fan? So, yeah, I mean, I think every fan base has different standards.
I would counter and say this, though. If you're spending that type of money on a quarterback, you probably believe that you're a Super Bowl contender. Because if not, then why? Mm-hmm. Then why would you do it? It's just a waste of money, and it's you know, it is what it is. So we'll, time will tell. I mean, do I think they're going to win their division? No. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? I don't know. Maybe the NFC, we kind of don't know complete. You know what I mean? We feel like the NFC is a little bit weaker, so to speak, than the AFC. But, you know, at this point, really, we don't really know what they're going to do. And like I said, I wouldn't put them among the three best teams in the conference. Not right now, at least. So, maybe during the first half when we all get fooled again by Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals, and then downhill from there on out. So, yeah, like I said, we have a lot to talk about today. And, before we get to, our next group of topics, and that would be a contract extension for a wide receiver, another group of players that have been getting paid quite a bit lately. An older wide receiver, John, not quite your age, but old. Not quite Tom Brady age either, but still old in terms of the NFL. Julio Jones has joined the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, you know, if, what, 3 years ago, John? I mean, Julio Jones, you could argue, was the best receiver in football. Member of the all-decade team, 2010s. Antonio Brown has better numbers in that decade than Julio Jones. And you're talking about a guy who was just a beast at his position, but the last two seasons has been not that. And, you know, obviously now 32 years old, you got to figure some of that is age. He had some lingering issues, but he's coming to a team that's relatively deep at the offensive skill position, you know, saying, you know, without Antonio Brown, obviously, and obviously without Rob Gronkowski, but they've since added Kyle Rudolph and now Julio Jones to the mix. And, you know, quite frankly, John, I think this is exactly the type of signing you want to do if you're a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. I mean, what do you got to lose with Julio Jones?
Exactly. I mean, it's a step up from Antonio Brown because we know Julio Jones is a total pro.
Yeah. He's
going to show up in shape, as did Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown was always in great shape. That was never an issue. But we know that from time to time, he'd kind of go off the reservation. Julio Jones is the anti-Antonio Brown. Like, you never really hear much about him. Again, the injuries are a concern. I'm sure they could load manage him where, you know, he's going to miss some games maybe early in the season. If there's a cluster in the schedule where, you know, you're playing four games in 21 days or 18 days or whatever, you may want to give him a game off so you have him healthy for the stretch and into the postseason. And I honestly think that, you know, maybe getting him working with Alex Guerrero might be a good thing because a lot of his injuries have been those soft tissue injuries, hamstring, calves, you know, all those types of things, quads, and maybe Alex Guerrero can work with that to limber up. Now, again, you know, he's an explosive athlete. It's different than maybe working with a quarterback. So, but, you know, look, it's worth a gamble, right? I mean, without question. And again, he's not going to be getting the loads work that Mike Evans gets or Chris Godwin or whoever else. I mean, they're pretty deep at that position. So, yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you get a quarterback at that caliber and aging wide receivers want to look and maybe get a ring. They go join him because he took a ring from you 6 years ago when he was at Atlanta, and he was probably, you know, right there with Brady as the best player on the field that night, and the Patriots came back from that 28-3 deficit.
Yeah, one of the most forgettable great plays in NFL history, in Super Bowl history.
Man.
I mean, if Atlanta wins that game, you know, that's the play that leads every highlight reel is that catch. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, look, give credit where credit's due. Matt Ryan made a hell of a throw too, but I mean, the catch was, I mean, fully extended, toe tapping on the sideline. What do they call it? Toe drag swag right there. And that was like the epitome of that. But yeah, look, I mean, he's not coming in like, you know, he goes to Tennessee last year and it was a big deal. You know, it was Julio Jones is moving on. I mean, you still expected 1,600 yards, Julio Jones, 113 catches, Julio Jones. And they didn't get that because, well, he was injured. So now he's, you know, over the hill. And look, I mean, there's probably some truth to that. I mean, not many wide receivers continue to produce at such an elite level over the age of 30. Now, I can also draw a comparison to another wide receiver, John, that dominated the league and then had a poor couple seasons around the age of 30, 31, and then became a member of the New England Patriots. Do you remember this guy?
Yeah. I remember him, Randy Moss.
Yes, that's right, Randy Moss. Now, again, I'm not sitting here saying Julio Jones is Randy Moss. I happen to think Randy Moss is one of the two best receivers to ever play the game, and you know, I'll leave that up to discussion for all of you. But you know, Julio Jones, around the same age, a little bit older. I think Moss was 30 when he got traded. I think he was probably 31 or 32. So yeah, about the same age because Brady was 30, and I think Randy's a little bit older than he is. Or maybe not, I don't know. I mean, I think Brady's older than everyone ever alive, but whatever.
he's older than half the guys that, you know, get inducted into the Hall of Fame on a yearly basis.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I mean, he's going for quite the record there. But yeah, so it's like, what do you got to lose if you're Tampa? You need to replace Gronk's production. Now, the things Gronk does, you're not going to replace. However, you know, his numbers were modest, so if you can get that production out of somewhere else, and who knows, maybe Julio Jones plays a little bit of a tight end type role, you know, doing some of the things that certainly not, maybe not blocking, but like, you know, in terms of the offensive part of it, it's like, you know, look, you can play him across the field, and if you can utilize him to his maximum ability, I mean, you know, Tom's going to force feed him the ball to get, you know. Yeah, he's going to trust him because, to your point, I mean, he's a professional, and Tom knows that. And I think that's part of the reason why it's going to work out well, you know, relative. I mean, again, I'm certainly not suggesting 1,600 yards. I mean, if you can get a solid season out of Julio Jones, that's the type of player you want come playoff time. That's all I can say. I mean, if you can get a solid regular season out of him, and he's healthy going into the playoffs, the signing will be worth it because, you know, he can make a big impact over three or four games. And then that's I think, is the important part of the signing.
Without question. And the thing is, I mean, Moss was healthy when he came here. I know he had, like, a nagging injury in his first training camp, but it had appeared that he just kind of gave up in Oakland, right, whereas Julio Jones has been fighting injuries. So we'll see if he can recover from those. But again, there's not going to be as much pressure on Julio Jones going to Tampa Bay because they've got a bevy of really talented wide receivers. So again, load management, pick your spots for them, have them healthy for the postseason. And now when they get to the postseason, Godwin will be back. You've got Evans, who's a top flight receiver. And I wouldn't be surprised if Rob Gronkowski isn't back at some point during the season. Who knows? But then Brady will have his, you know, choice of weapons, which, you know, makes him nearly unbeatable at that point. The key here is how many reps that Brady can get with Julio Jones, because we know that Brady is that guy that likes to really build chemistry with his players, and that's going to be important. So that's where the health concerns come in, because if you're banged up or you're nicked up, you can't really practice as much as you want, and Brady loves to practice as much as he likes to play the games. That's why he's the greatest quarterback ever, is the time he puts in. So that's going to be important as well, so he can build up that rapport with Julio Jones. But that's a great, great move, because what's the worst? He's not the same player, and you cut him or whatever, but it's worth a gamble for sure.
Well, what do you think? Like 50 catches, 600 yards,
yeah,
five touchdowns?
Somewhere around there. Yeah, the thing about Julio Jones, as great as he's been, and I think, like you said, he and Antonio Brown were the two receivers on the all-decade team of the 2010s. He's never been a high touchdown guy, except for very early in his career. But yeah, I would think, you know, 40 catches, 40 to 50 catches, 600 yards, you know, four or five touchdowns. But again, it's when the impact takes place.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it. And again, the Brady, Gronkowski's first year with Tampa, he had a good, not a great year, but how was he in the postseason, especially in the Super Bowl, where he had two touchdown receptions. So it's the big moments that will count. And that's where, again, if you're a defensive coordinator and you've got these guys all healthy that you're facing, it's like, holy crap, you know, what exactly are we going to do? Who do we cover? There's just an incredible amount of talent out there. So, yeah, I could see that 40 to 50 catches, 600-700 yards, 5 touchdowns. And you know, again, pick your spots with him so that he's at his best in the postseason.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if that's the stat line, you're thrilled with that if you're Tampa Bay, because that generally says he's probably been pretty healthy and he's been managed pretty well. So I'll be interested to see ultimately how that plays out. But you know, look, if you're Tampa, you got to be excited. I mean, this is what happens when you have a Super Bowl contender and you have a guy like Tom Brady as your quarterback. Like, players want to play with him, and I think this was a move that, you know, I'm sure they discussed for a while, not necessarily because of Gronk, but I'm sure the Gronk retirement, I'm using air quotes right now, you know, kind of pushed that. But also, you know, look, training camp. I mean, this is a time you want to make sure that, you know, you get that rapport, and he's going to be here for training camp. And that's something that will go a long way with getting them on the same page come week one. So speaking of another receiver, John, we're going to talk more receivers before we close out the day. DK Metcalf signs a huge, huge extension. 3 years, $72 million. I mean, good for DK. I don't know who the hell's going to throw him the ball. I mean, I saw yesterday Geno Smith was winning the quarterback competition, and to that I say, good luck. But, hey, good for him. He got his money. I don't know how happy he's ultimately going to be in Seattle, because right now I just don't see an obvious answer at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think it was wise on his move to at least get this contract signed so that he gets his money, because his numbers may dip this year. If it's Geno Smith or Drew Lock throwing in the football, it's not the same as Russell Wilson. So, you know, does he want to go into free agency with, you know, less than impressive numbers? And look, scouts understand how good this guy is, and they understand that, you know, with an upgraded quarterback, his numbers would go up, obviously. But he gets this thing signed. $30 million signing bonus, $58 million is guaranteed. So at least he gets that done. So now it's Deebo Samuel in San Francisco that we're going to have to watch to see what happens with him, because he's also changing quarterbacks from Jimmy Garoppolo to Trey Lance in San Francisco. So, and there is a possibility that if the 49ers release Jimmy Garoppolo, which it sounds like they're going to do at some point, that maybe Garoppolo goes into the fray at Seattle. And I would take Garoppolo over both Geno Smith and Drew Lock. I think that would be an upgraded quarterback. But who the hell knows what Seattle's actually trying to do? I mean, if a team's in a tank mode, you know, this might be the year, because there's supposed to be some good quarterbacks available, and Seattle's going to have to draft a quarterback. Probably them and Atlanta, the two teams you look at that don't have great rosters, that might be fighting for that first overall pick, and both teams need quarterbacks. So you would think that those two teams are in that mode right now. But good for him. He's an outstanding wide receiver. Big contract for probably the biggest receiver in football. I mean, he's a massive individual, physical specimen, and seems like a likable guy who's got a real good personality. But he's going to get frustrated this year with those two quarterbacks throwing him the football.
Well, you know, look, the good thing is it's only a 3-year contract, so it brings him to what, age 28. So he has the potential or the opportunity to sign another pretty good. I mean, we saw the type of contracts that Tyreek Hill got at that age. I mean, he's 29 now. Davante Adams obviously got a big contract, and I'm not saying that he's either one of those guys, but there's still an opportunity for him to get another payday, because this isn't like a 6-year deal where he is locked in forever. But, you know, to your point, is Seattle trying to tank? I don't know. Look, is Pete Carroll interested in tanking? I mean, he's the oldest. I mean, it's great. I always kind of chuckle at this, but he's the oldest coach in the league right now.
Yeah, he's 71.
Yeah.
He's a year older than Belichick.
Does he really want to tank and, you know, go through that process? So maybe the Seahawks have somehow convinced themselves they're going to be a contender with who they have under center. I don't believe so. I don't think they were good enough with Russell Wilson, let alone Drew Lock and Geno Smith. I do agree with you that Jimmy Garoppolo would certainly be an upgrade, but I mean, again, I'm not the biggest Russell Wilson fan, but he's better than Jimmy Garoppolo, okay?
Right.
Which, again, I think Jimmy Garoppolo's, and we've talked about this, he's lacking something that makes you an elite quarterback. There's no specific term for it. There's no specific description. He's just missing it. It. Not the clown from It. I'm not Pennywise. He's just missing it. And you know, something you just can't explain because of the importance of that position.
Yeah, it could be. Well, health is one thing. I mean, he's never really been the most durable guy. Although, two out of the last 3 years, he's played most of the games. And we've seen San Francisco go to a Super Bowl and lose, go to an NFC Championship game and lose. But the game was there for him to win in both situations. I mean, you could be looking, if Garoppolo had that thing that you said, Ian, it, he could have won two of the last three Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I mean, I think San Francisco had it in their hands against the Rams. And if they win that game, they're going to be favored over Cincinnati. And they had Kansas City beaten in the Super Bowl when they faced each other. So that it factor, I think, is more talent than anything. I mean, that just is a shortcoming with his talent. I think he kind of carries himself like a star quarterback. He's confident. I think his teammates like him, but I don't know how much they believe in him. And there's a difference there, right? You know, they'll play for him. They swear by him. But I think there's still certain throws that he just can't make. That the elite quarterbacks make, and that's the difference.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that's an issue for whoever ultimately has Jimmy Garoppolo under center, is that you cannot convince yourself that just because he came from playing under Tom Brady that he is Tom Brady. And I think that's, I mean, we saw it here in New England for what felt like years, John. I mean, just this obsession with Jimmy Garoppolo while Tom Brady was here and after he left. Like, it just wouldn't stop, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, what do these people see? Like, I'm with you. Like, I like the guy. Like, I think he seems like a great guy, but, you know, I put it up here on the screen here, and Joel, our good friend Joel, you know, loyal listener, I think Jimmy G lacks the drive to improve himself. He's too cautious when playing, and I think that there's some truth to that because, you know, we see him, and we heard the criticism from former teammates about him not, you know, just not toughing it out when a lot of other players would. He seems to play very overly cautious, hence why sometimes you see those not being able to deliver in the Super Bowl against Kansas City when literally all you had to do is hit a wide open pass. I mean, that was it. That game, that ball is caught, completed, game's over. They're Super Bowl champions, and you have a whole different idea of what Jimmy Garoppolo is.
So. I know people say that. I mean, it was a 65-yard pass. For one thing, and again, the elite quarterbacks are going to nail that pass, right?
You know, well, and then that's what we're discussing with Jimmy Garoppolo,
right? But it would have put them up by 3 or 4 at that point, and Kansas City would have got the ball back. So, I mean, it wasn't like it happened in the last 30 seconds.
I think that would have gone along because, like, you do that, and it's like, you know, Kansas City wasn't really. I mean, again, let's not forget. I mean, Patrick Mahomes did not have a great Super Bowl. I mean,
he had a good fourth quarter. That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and like a majority of that, John, came from a dump-off pass to the running back who just racked up yards at the end. So it really inflated his stat line to make it seem like he had a pretty good. He didn't have a great fourth quarter, so or Super Bowl in general, which seems to be a pattern with Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, we'll discuss that on another day. Trust me, I'm building up my energy for all my quarterback discussions later in the season. So, I do think that, you know, that play, you make that play, you probably win that game. I say you have a 99% chance because this wasn't a, you know, last team to get the ball will win. I mean, it just Kansas City was not able to move the ball like that. So I do believe that if they would complete that. But, you know, and that's a big deal. I mean, you say it, you know, elite quarterback Tom Brady makes that pass, you know, clearly. And look, my agenda is this, and I've been pushing it since, you know, he left the Patriots. That the 49ers colossally screwed up by not going after the very obvious solution for them, and that is to sign their hometown kid, and I say kid very loosely, and Tom Brady. Like, I still think, you know, if you're 49ers, like, the fact that you, I mean, twice, like, think about it, John, twice they passed on Tom Brady.
Yep.
Once in 2000, when he was literally in their backyard, and now again, and you think about it, like, San Francisco wins a Super Bowl one of the last 2 years if you have Tom Brady under center.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. I mean, their talent level is top five, I believe, on both sides of the football. Plenty of weapons. The problem with San Francisco is Kyle Shanahan's opinion of himself is much higher than it should be.
True.
I mean, I think he makes, I mean, we think Sean McVay is cocky, but at least Sean McVay now has the Super Bowl. And he took over an organization that was in the doldrums for a decade and a half, the Rams. In fact, they were moving from St. Louis to L.A., which turned out to be a good thing. But Sean McVay, you know, at least has won that Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan had an opportunity to win two Super Bowls, one as a coordinator, one as a head coach, and he was god-awful. Talk about being god-awful in the fourth quarter. Lord, I mean, just terrible play calling when he was the OC with the Falcons against the Patriots and then as the head coach of the 49ers against the Chiefs. And even last year against the Rams in the NFC Championship game, I think it's something like 57-0 yeah. that those three teams were outscored in the fourth quarter and overtime of those three games, which is, it doesn't even seem possible. I mean, also fault his defense, but heck, you know, he's the head coach in two of those games, so blame him as well. But yeah, I think Shanahan is one of those coaches who thinks he can just take any quarterback and win with it. That yeah, it doesn't matter, that whether it's Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo, or anybody else, which is foolish. And maybe he gets that from his dad, who won two Super Bowls, but was a very mediocre coach until he ran into John Elway.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like he should have learned from that and say, what's the common denominator in my success as a head coach?
Let's very see, elite.
John Elway.
Yeah. Very elite.
Right, one of the all-time great quarterbacks, right? I mean, you know, kind of like a guy who I think, you know, if every situation was the same, may have been as great as any quarterback we've ever seen in John Elway. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And some of these coaches, look, everybody thinks players have egos, and they do, but the coaches have massive egos as well.
Have you been paying attention to what's happening down in Miami? I agree. Mike McDaniel is becoming a social media star. And
yes.
good luck, Miami, because, you know, that's not necessarily what you want out of coaching. But We'll I'm not judging yet because we haven't played a single game, so I can't judge until I see the results. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and project because I don't really know, but the cool hip, I'm going to take a selfie with all the media personality. I don't think that's sustainable as an NFL coach. Like the goody, you know, two shoes. I'm going to, you know, kind of really be, you know, at a certain point, if you don't win, you're going to get torn apart. And I think sure. that's what's going to happen here, because I'm not a big fan of Tua. I don't think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's mm-hmm. necessarily accurate. I certainly disagree with Tyreek Hill, because Tyreek Hill's singing his praises. But, you know, I sit there and I say, all right, so, you know, Mike McDaniel's this young guy. He's got, you know, he's got the Kanye West shoes on, and he, you know, he's looking all, you know, slick and everything up there, and he's cool and everything like that. And I'm like, okay, great. That's a lot of surface stuff that I just don't care about. I mean, you know me, John. I mean, you sit there and project, you know, especially as a coach, I want you bland. I don't need showmanship. I don't need you know funny lines. I don't need like this like unique personality. Like, I just need someone who's focused on football. And that's why I love Bill Belichick, obviously, because he's a great coach. But he doesn't really care. Like, he's not going to go up there and do, like, selfies with the media, because he just doesn't care. Like, he's worried about football. And, like, if I'm Miami, you know,
he just does it with Elton John and John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the offseason, of course. You know, wait, when you win six Super Bowls, you can kind of do what you want. But when you're Mike McDaniel and you're a rookie head coach and, you know, you're getting all this early honeymoon praise – well, guess what? You start losing games, it's going to be not a fun time, let's put it that way. And like I said, if I'm a Dolphins fan, you know, I'm more concerned about the team winning games as opposed to the head coach getting great line, you know. You know, you see what happens with all the national media. They get all giddy over, you know, Mike McDaniel's like little quips and lines. It's like, oh, he's so cool. All right, well, what happens when he doesn't win games? And that's you know, we'll find out. But like I said, I'm not going to judge right now, John. I'm not going to judge right now. We haven't seen a game yet. We haven't seen what they're going to look like. But yeah, I don't know. I'm happy as a Patriots fan to see that. But you know me, like I said, I had a problem with that when it comes to that the young core of coaches that we pretty much just talk about with, you know, McVay and Kingsbury and Kyle Shanahan, you know, that I guess I would group them together as kind of like a generation of coach. You know what I mean? Because they're all relatively the same age. They all apparently came from the Washington organization, which, I mean, again, if you're Washington, what the hell are you thinking? Like getting rid of some really good offensive play callers. But, you know, the whole, you know, we're going to, I'm going to hire, I keep going back to Sean McVay, but I did promise that I'm going to have to ease up a little bit because he did win a Super Bowl. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, kind of change my tone a little bit with him. But still, the idea of hiring someone to keep him off the sidelines because he can't control that, or, you know, the going to the draft and having these elaborate setups, you know, looking at all this technology, this is what we're doing, that's what we're doing. It's like, okay, great. I don't really care about any of that. You know, I'd rather you show up in a ratty sweatshirt and just go and coach on the football field and never hear from you other than your required media presence. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel, and that's how I would hope a coach or the coach of the team that I follow would be, because, again, I feel like they're the ones that shouldn't be distracted with anything other than just coaching.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's different ways to do things. So be yourself. If yourself is that person that likes attention, maybe you're taking attention away from your team, which can be a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because maybe the players push back and say, hey, you know, we're the guys out here making the plays. Because I think now when you think of the Rams, probably the two names you think of first and foremost would be Aaron Donald, who many believe is right up there as the best player in football, and Sean McVay, even more so than his own quarterback. So maybe players like that because he deflects a lot of attention away from them. But when they get successful, they also want some of that praise as well. But, yeah, I mean, look, the game evolves, and now you've got a lot of young coaches. They almost look like they're brothers, right?
Yeah.
Kingsbury and McVay and Shanahan and Matt LaFleur. It's like, you know, Abercrombie and Fitch commercial with these good-looking dudes at coach. Like, they're fit. They look like they can still play.
When, real quick, before we go, and it's just, this just kind of popped into my head, when does Matt LaFleur start getting some heat? Because
when Aaron Rodgers decides to put heat on him, which, you know, by the next playoff loss, I'm sure Rodgers will blame his coach for the loss, not himself.
I think that's a very accurate answer. But, yeah, because I'm thinking, you know, Mike McCarthy, you know, I think, you know, again, I think his reputation was really hurt by his time in Green Bay, and not necessarily because of him. I think, to your point, the quarterback had a lot of hand in that. But I wonder when the honeymoon period is going to be over, because we're what, three seasons now into the Matt LaFleur era. Great record. I mean, you can't fault him for that. But butt kiss in the playoffs. And that was the big concern with Mike McCarthy, because the Packers won games. I mean, there were seasons where Aaron Rodgers was injured, and obviously their record dipped. But, you know, they won games consistently. They just couldn't get over the hump. And now you're seeing the same thing. Now, again, my response to that is it's not necessarily coaching. But the coach is going to get the blame for it. And considering the slack that Mike McCarthy got, certainly in his last few years with the Packers, and he had a Super Bowl ring, I wonder if that might start happening with Matt LaFleur soon, because we're going into year four, and guess what? Packers fans want to win a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? They want to win a Super Bowl. So they're not going to, and rightfully so, like, their standards are high, as they should be. Like, I would be the same way. Like, you want to see this team win a Super Bowl. You just don't want them to see them, you know, be the Boston Bruins of the 1990s and early 2000s. Oh, we made the playoffs. Let's go home. Because that's kind of what the Packers have been. Oh, we made the playoffs. Great regular season. MVP, Aaron Rodgers. Playoffs, nothing. So, again, I wonder if that might start happening this year. If maybe... Yeah.
It's really strange because in his first 3 years, he's 39-10 in the regular season, which is incredible. In the history of football, there's never been a team that won 13 or more games three consecutive seasons. It blows my mind. They've been so great in the regular season. Then they get to the postseason and, you know, they lose an NFC championship game at home against Tampa. That's the one that still, you know, sticks in my craw. And then, of course, what happened 6 months ago in the divisional round against San Francisco is just like, it's still numbing. You know, the offense scores on the first drive and then goes to sleep after that, and then a blocked punt. But you shouldn't even be in a situation that is going to hurt you if you score more than 10 freaking points in a playoff game, which you should, at home in, mm-hmm. in inclement weather where you're pretty much unbeatable. Heck, Aaron Rodgers is 5-4 now at Lambeau Field in the postseason. I don't understand how that's happened. But pressure will fall. But they've just extended him, Matt LaFleur, and they've extended Brian Gutekunst, the general manager. So those guys are going to be there for a while, unless, again, the Packers say it's just not working and, you know, they're going to write big checks to these guys to show them the door. But I think that there's definitely pressure on Matt LaFleur. And I think a lot of it is that, you know, like the special teams, and again, not to get so micro, but the special teams have been problems. And finally, they did bring in a good special teams coach, so that should make things better. But that, you know, is that going to sway the whole thing? Probably not. You know, you have to go out there and win a Super Bowl to quiet the fans on, because they are very demanding, as they should be. They've got 13 titles mm-hmm. in their history, so why wouldn't they be demanding? But, LaFleur is probably on the hot seat a little bit. It's going to be another situation with, okay, they went 13-4 again. Well, you know, wake me up when the playoffs start. Yeah. Almost kind of like the Atlanta Braves in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, where you're always there, you've got this great rotation, and you got one World Series to show for it.
Yeah, no, that's a great comparison. Great comparison. So, all right, we're going to say goodbye for the day and for the week. We will be back for a nice full week next week, though. So get ready for that, because there's going to be a lot more NFL training camp news. The Hall of Fame game next week, next Thursday. First football that we get of the season, and then it's nonstop until mid-February. So pretty excited about that. So in the meantime, give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live. I am at IGLEN31. And, of course, you can find John over at JohnSap25. So thank you very much for everyone tuning in, listening, watching, and all that fun stuff. And we will talk to you on Monday.